I had such a great time talking to my next guest, Stephan Buys. He's currently a patrol sergeant with the Addison Police Department in Addison, Illinois. He's got over 19 years of experience in various capacities. He's also the founder and CEO of Blue Line Spectrum Safety, LLC, providing first responders with training regarding autism and developmental disabilities. You do not want to miss this very informative interview with Stephan Buys, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the top-ranked Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for continuing to support this great podcast. If you love the show, please subscribe, continue sharing it with your family and friends, and lastly, give us that five-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We sure would appreciate it. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. We know you're going to love the show, and thank you for being here. Long-time listener, thank you for coming back. Thank you for your continued support. Again, we love you all. Big shout-out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing a very difficult environment. It always has been, always will be, but you go out there every day, put everything on the line for us. Thank you so much. Don't believe some of the crap you hear in the media. You are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. So excited to be affiliated with The Badge Life. This company is amazing and kick-ass apparel for men and women. They even have gym gear and bags designed for the first responders out there. You're going to see the link to The Badge Life in the show notes, and you got to check it out. As a matter of fact, I had Tony Malik, the CEO and founder of The Badge Life, on the show, and that show is going to be dropping very soon. Again, check out The Badge Life in the show notes. If you love coffee, you're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. I have been a huge fan of this company for many years now, and I don't get my day started without my Lion's Mane mushroom coffee. Yes, you heard me right. I said mushrooms. The good mushrooms, not the bad mushrooms. And just such great tasting, gives me that energy, clarity, and zip that I need to get me through my busy days. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. On to this great show with the one and only Stephan Buys. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have my next guest on the show, Stephan Buys. He is currently a patrol sergeant with the Addison Police Department in Addison, Illinois, and has served for over 19 years. Actually, it's 20 years right now. He is also the CEO and founder of Blue Line Spectrum Safety, LLC, which provides comprehensive training to LEOs and other partners in regards to the unique challenges regarding those affected by autism and other intellectual disabilities to promote a greater understanding between all. Doing amazing work. Hey, Stephan, you there, brother?
I am here.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, man. Like I said, I appreciate, and everybody in the law enforcement community appreciates what you're doing. You're giving back to our brave men and women, you know, trying to build, bridge that gap, like we just talked about. Thank you for coming on the show. I ask all the Leos that come on my show, brother, I'm going to ask you the same thing. Why did you get into law enforcement?
Well, I think I got into the same reason everybody said it. I wanted to
help
the world and help everybody. But I'm going to be real honest. Like, I wanted to drive cars. I wanted to shoot guns.
Drive
and I wanted those bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really, in the beginning, that's what it was. And when I was the young patrolman, I was, you know, running and gunning. And, you know, every arrest I could make, I made it. And that was really what I do. And obviously, we all got into this profession to give back to others. And we know that. But it was the adrenaline, the rush, the excitement of it that really drew me into this career. And it hasn't disappointed in 20 years. I'll tell you that.
You know, it's the greatest show on earth, man. I mean, it's not Groundhog Day. Every day is different.
Nope.
You just never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of Cracker Jacks. If anybody is old enough to remember what Cracker Jacks are.
Absolutely. As I laugh, I said, you know, come into work and it was a slow night until, you know, 30 seconds into it, everything breaks loose and you're running and gunning. You're like, man, I didn't expect that this evening, you know.
Well, there's always the shit magnet. We know, you know that, brother. There's always the guy,
absolutely,
or the officer, the guy or girl who is just, you know, everything's going, you know, it's good. You know, it's been a good night. And then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose because that certain officer is not to belittle those offers, but we all know who the shit magnets are.
Absolutely. And for the longest time, I had that black cloud following me. And every night I was working, it was the guy. I'm like, man, like, who did I piss off today?
But now, I mean, it's a very challenging time right now, brother, with COVID-19. And I, you know, I just want to get your take on it right now. And, you know, a lot of changes, you know, in agencies, obviously. How has it impacted operations from your perspective? I mean, COVID-19.
You know, we've kind of gone through these peaks and valleys. Like, you know, when the initial wave hit, it really didn't affect our apartment too bad, but we kind of scaled back our mission, if that made sense. Mm-hmm. So we weren't really doing anything proactive. And clearly we can't just stop all operations. We were, you know, we were going to our calls, but anything we could handle over the phone, we were handling over the phone. But we really weren't making arrests. We weren't there being proactive. We had really scaled back a number of our traffic stops. And we just kind of sat in limbo until this thing mm-hmm. kind of subsided a little bit. And then we picked up and we went back to full mission. And now we've kind of scaled it back again, where we're back to, we're really not doing anything proactive, responding to a lot of calls. Anything that can be handled over the phone, we're doing over the phone. The proactivity is stopped with my officers, which in a lot of ways is very frustrating, but mm-hmm. I understand it. And then now it's kind of hitting our department a little bit harder. We've got about, just the past couple of weeks, we got about 10 guys that tested positive. And for wow. a department of 62 guys, mm-hmm. that's a good chunk of your department. So yeah. Like any of our training we're doing is all via remote and Zoom. And I have our defensive tactics instructor. I had to scale back my DT program. We couldn't do anything in person, no hands-on. So I'm like, well, how do I work a defensive tactics class with no hands-on? I'm like, I can only show them so many videos in a practical setting, but I need to get hands-on. I need to get mat time with my guy. So it's, you know, but day-to-day, we're still out there. We're still doing our job. It's just, we're doing things a little bit different. And, honestly, it's not ideal how we're doing it, but it's just the nature of where we're at right now. It has been an absolute struggle in some of our instances with trying to get things accomplished, but I'm hoping that this next wave kind of pushes through and we're able to go back to the full mission of our department and, you know, being what we're supposed to be and being proactive and engaging the community. I think that's the biggest part, is we haven't really been able to engage the community like we typically would have if we didn't have these restrictions. So like some of our big programs that we do, like, you know, our Shop with a Hero for Christmas, that's already been scaled back. And traditionally what we do is we take our most needy families in town, whether they're contacted through us, through our department, or are given to us by our school district. You know, we bring them in, we pair the families up with our firemen and our police officers, and all of our donations come in, and we get about $100 per kid, and they're allowed to go to Walmart and basically pick out anything they want.
Yeah.
And it's our Shop
Such a good program. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's one of my favorite programs that we do every Christmas, but we can't do it like we would have. So this year we're buying things and we're delivering these gifts to these families.
Yeah.
But it's the whole part of being paired with us and engaging in the families and everything that is the big key to this. And it's, we're losing that aspect of it, that in-person community relations building, we're really losing. And there were some other things we had to scale back too. So yeah. I think that's where we really suffered, is we haven't been able to engage our community typically like we would have.
Yeah, and that's so important. And I like what you said, or it's interesting what you said about those perishable skills. I mean, obviously those are skills that, you know, dissipate over time. If you like DT, firearms, and I'm sure you're still doing firearms, but it, I mean, you know, maybe driving skill. I mean, all those things are perishable, as you know, but you still have to keep up with them as best as you can.
Yeah, and it's been a very difficult thing, because even, you know, I run my defensive tactics classes twice a year. I do them in the spring and I do them in the fall. And this was right in the middle of it in the spring. So we scaled back and couldn't do anything in person in the spring, hoping to push for the fall. And then as our fall classes are rolling in, it hits again and I have to scale back my fall classes. So I missed a lot of that mat time, or those physical skills, that, you know, repetition and muscle memory that we really need. Mm-hmm. We didn't get a chance to utilize that this year. So, you know, by the time we roll back into the mats on the spring, we're a year out from where we were at. Yeah. So it's like, I'm almost starting from scratch what we like to build on. You know, we build a little bit here and it's building blocks. You teach them this skill, which builds into the next skill, which builds into the next skill. So we're really going to scale it back in the spring and go back to basics again, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now I imagine it's like in Illinois, Steph, and you correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, it's in Colorado, you have to meet certain amount of post hours, you know, with the state every year. I mean, it's, you know, 12, 12 and 12, 12 hours of firearms,
12 hours of, you know, defensive tactics and then 12 hours of driving. Is it like that in Illinois?
Yeah, it's very similar like that. You have a lot of state mandates that we have to meet, and defensive tactics and firearms are one of those ones we have to meet. So we're able to cater the class to meet those standards, but there's always a component where we have to have a practical associated with that training. And that's what we're missing, is that practical, but the state is waiving some of that for this year because of all the restrictions, but we don't want to waive it. We want to get that practical hands-on training. That's, we know that's the best, the way that officers learn is physically doing it and repetition and muscle memory and developing those skills and actually put them into a practical setting. So we lost a lot of that this year, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. And I, like I said before we started, brother, I really admire the brave men and women like you who are currently serving, because I got out, you know, in 2019, and 2020, obviously an understatement. It's been a weird year, you know, so we got COVID, and then we have all this other stuff going on within, you know, defund and all this other stuff that's going on, you know, in the United States. What do you think some of the biggest challenges from your lens, you know, what do you think some of the big challenges you see law enforcement facing in the future?
Well, I think one of the biggest things we're going to have to try to overcome is, number one, the stigma that now is associated with us because of so much negative media attention. And when you have these major incidents that we're talking about, some of them, granted, law enforcement is at fault, but a lot of them, some of them are not. And it's, but everything is lumped into it. It was the police's fault. And it's not necessarily the case. And I wish before people pass judgment, they really see the full story or the full, you know, the full scope of that incident, and then look at it from the officer's perspective a little bit. We have to make second decisions in split seconds, life and death situations. You know, the laws are designed that way to give us the benefit of the doubt. And we know that, you know, our decisions and use of force situations shouldn't be, are not to be second guessed or Monday morning quarterbacked, because they're, it's set up so it's judged through the eyes of a reasonable police officer at that moment. And it's critical that never gets talked about. That little tidbit of information gets left out of when you hear all this stuff. And this is the way the laws were created for us. The Supreme Court said, yes, this is how we want these incidents to be looked at from the eyes of the officer at the scene at that moment, making those decisions. And people seem to forget that.
Yeah.
I think getting over this negative media attention, it is going to be difficult. It's going to be very difficult. And for no matter what we do, the good things are, you know, one of the last things at the news, but one of the bad things we do is always going to be the front page of the news. And that's a very difficult stigma to overcome. It's the great things that we do every day that law enforcement officers across this country do. And every single day really never gets recognized or really never gets put out in the media to say, yes, there are some bad instances, don't get me wrong, but there are so many more positive things that we are doing with our communities and building those relationships that never gets talked about. And that's disheartening for us as law enforcement. And I think we're doing the people we serve an injustice, because they need to understand that there's so many positive things that we're doing, but it doesn't really sell. So the media's not going to put it out there for us.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and it's so unfortunate. So much has changed since you and I got into this business. And you mentioned, you know, it's going to take a long time to rebuild, you know, maybe that trust within the community. I remember, you know, Rodney King reverberated to the law enforcement community for decades.
Yes.
But, you know, I think we're definitely living in a different time now, obviously, with the media being, not all the media, but, you know, certain, you know, media outlets per se, I mean, are definitely more hostile towards law enforcement than others. And it's just a shame. I remember I was having a discussion with a friend of mine a couple of days ago about, I remember growing up and people, the news anchors would just report the news and that would be it. And you kind of, you decide, you know, how you want to, you know, respond and what your beliefs are. Now it's just, so we're just inundated with, you know, just these messages of, you know, defund and get rid of, and there, but I do believe there's a lot of supporters out there, brother. I mean, I really do believe it.
I do too. And I think the overwhelming majority of our country and the people that we serve do support us. And I really do that. And it's just frustrating that the media has become so opinion-based as opposed to fact-based. And that's a disheartening thing. But I think the overwhelming still majority, and I still believe that the people that I serve in my community still support us. And we see that every day. And granted, I'm in a smaller jurisdiction. I'm a average sized agency, and I'm not working in a major like a Chicago or an LA or New York, where it's just, you're in the heart of it. And I have a friend who I've known for a couple of years, and he's in Seattle, and I talk to him and I just chuckle and shake my head and be like, we thought we had it bad till you talk to a couple of those Seattle guys. And it's like, oh man, I don't envy you. I'm like, Chris, I'm like, I'm behind you, buddy. Because I'm
well,
like,
didn't they have that new country chop for a while?
They had the whole thing set up, and he said that it was just what was getting released and what was not getting released. It was disheartening. I would text him every time I hear something about Seattle. I'd give him a message. I'm like, how you doing out there? And he's like, oh, struggling. He's like, you have no clue. So just when you think you have it bad, you'll talk to somebody else. You're like, maybe it's not as bad as I thought it was.
Very, very true. Let's pivot now, brother. And if you don't mind, I want to talk about your great work. You're the CEO and founder of Blue Line Spectrum Safety. Now, I know you have two small children, two sons with autism. Was that part of the catalyst which made you start this great program?
It absolutely was. And, you know, for us, when my two youngest sons were diagnosed in 2013, after you get the initial shock of this diagnosis of your sons, my wife and I kind of set out on this mission to be advocates for our sons, to really be the voice for them when they aren't really able to communicate. So we set out to learn everything we could possibly understand about autism. We found the best resources for our sons, the best therapies, and all these things to give them the skills to overcome some of the characteristics associated with their disability. And then obviously try to get them to be successful and be able to live positive and fruitful adult lives. Mm-hmm. But it was, as I started to look into these things, I realized that what happened if my two worlds, my personal life and then my professional life being law enforcement, collided? Do we as law enforcement really understand autism, the characteristics associated with it? And if we do, do we have the resources and tools and knowledge to be able to create these positive interactions so that we can successfully get through them and have this positive relationship with our special needs communities? And what I started to really realize is that there's a lot of lack of resources for law enforcement on this particular subject. We start looking at numbers. There's about 3.5 million Americans that live in this country with an autism diagnosis.
Wow. Yeah.
It's estimated that anywhere between 10 and 20% of the calls that we respond to involve someone with a disability. Mm-hmm. You know, autism is the fastest growing developmental disability in the world. So the question is, if you deal with autism on a call for service, it's when you're going to deal with autism on a call for service, because it is going to happen. Mm-hmm. A lot of officers have probably already had contact or interaction with somebody with autism, but maybe never even realized what they were dealing with.
Yeah.
And that was really the goal of my training. And I say this every time when I end my training, I said, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but somebody in this room who's listening to this today is going to interact with one of my two sons. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I have the best information out there for law enforcement officers so they can understand this, so that if tomorrow you are interacting with one of my sons, you have all the resources and the knowledge to safely interact with them and create this positive relationship with that. And that's really the goal of my training. So I've been doing it for several years now.
Well, I love it, man. And like I said, it's much needed. But for the listeners out there, Stefan, who don't know exactly what autism is, can you explain it?
Sure. So autism is a neurodevelopmental disability, and it really affects three major areas with people. It is social interaction, communication, and restrictive and repetitive behaviors, and then the failure to adjust to certain things. Really, when you think about it, those are the three things that we use to do our job as law enforcement.
Exactly.
It's how we communicate with people. Those are the red flags we look for that we're taught day one in the police academy. If somebody has these restrictive or strange mannerisms, does that draw a red flag for us in law enforcement? The truth is, yeah, it does, because that's how we're trained to do our job. We interact with somebody and they don't communicate, or they don't look at us in the eye. What do we automatically think? They're hiding something. Something's wrong. They're being deceitful, evasive. Or if we go to touch someone and they pull away, they're resisting now. So everything we use, the basic skills that we use to do our job, are the characteristics or the areas that affect someone with autism the most. So it's very easy to see how their characteristics associated with their disability can be misconstrued as something other than what it really is. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, it becomes a very difficult situation. So, and I tell officers, and when we're doing the training, I'm like, you will see these characteristics, but I'm trying to plant the seed in your head that it's not, it may not be what you think it is. They may not be evasive or hiding something or whatever it is. It may be associated with this disability. And we talk about some of the characteristics and keys to look for to say, maybe this isn't what I thought it was. And maybe it is a disability related characteristics and not them being, you know, uncooperative with us as we're handling some investigation.
Yeah. And I love what you said about, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, the amount, the numbers, because when you and I got into this profession, brother, I hate to speak for you, but I'm sure you're probably going to say you're right. I mean, we didn't respond to a lot of these people that were suffering mentally in mental distress. At least I didn't. No. We just didn't. Now it's like every day.
Yeah.
And it's just become just part of the job. So before we started, we mentioned CIT. I was trained in CIT. I know you're an instructor. I mean, it's good. But what I love about what you're doing is that it's so much more in depth and it's so much more training. CIT, from my perspective, you're just scratching the surface. You know, you're trying to de-escalate and stuff like that. But what I love about what your program and training does is because it goes so much deeper.
Right. And, you know, CIT, and like I said, I'm a CIT instructor here in Illinois, and I get 2 hours to teach about autism.
Yeah.
I'm squeezing an 8-hour block of instruction into 2 hours to try to make sure I can get as much in that 2 hours. But you're right when saying CIT is really just scraping the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference with my training is I go a lot more in depth into the characteristics of autism. I give some successful strategies. And I tell everybody, I said, I'm not just making this up. Like, a lot of what I talk about are my successes and failures. It's not just a police officer, but as a dad, I had to learn how to interact with my own 2 sons and understand their disability so that I can interact better with them. And some of the things that I did with my oldest mm-hmm. son, who is my typical 13-year-old, did not work for my younger 2 sons. So a lot of this is trial and error in my own successes and failures as a father too. So I'm taking what I learned in my personal life and applying it to the job.
Yeah.
And so we talk about building relationships with your special needs communities, programs that you can do within your agency. And I know what budgets are like in police departments. So
yeah.
Every program I have, vast majority of them are free resources. So it's anything that you could just go out, find, and initiate in a department and cost you $0.
And I imagine I don't know, you tell me, Stefan, I mean, how's the academies, the police academies out in Illinois? Because I know in Colorado, they teach a little bit of this, you know, but I really think that they need to be teaching a lot more. And I understand they got a curriculum, it's jam-packed, you got to meet certain requirements and stuff like that. I mean, how is it in Illinois? I imagine they don't cover a lot of it, right?
No, I think they get an hour block for autism in the academy out of 14 weeks.
Wow.
So it's very minimal what they're getting, because it's just not enough. And even mental health or crisis type calls, like, you said it, like, you know, probably, you know, in my career, you know, 2 decades of my career, we would go to 1 to 2 crisis calls, you know, in a week. Now we're doing 1 to 2 to 3 crisis calls in a shift.
Yeah.
And it's drastically changed. So this is part of our job now. This is just, it is what it is. And we have to adapt. We have to be educated. We have to have knowledge, because these are the calls that we are going to. These are the communities that we're serving. If we're not prepared and knowledgeable to handle these calls, then we're doing our communities an injustice. We really are.
Now, do you think COVID has added to this? I mean, because people are inside, they're sheltered, they're not outside, obviously. I mean, that's seems like during this year, we've gone through peaks and valleys where, okay, now you can go out, do stuff. But do you think, in your perspective, it's adding to some of these issues?
Absolutely, it is.
Yeah.
It's really adding to the stress, because people are now confined to their own homes. And I'll tell you, even with our special needs population, especially kids with autism, we've seen a significant number of wandering incidents, you know, where kids will wander from a safe environment, whether it's school or home, but now in this home environment, they want to be out of the house. They want to go to school. So in their mindset, they're like, well, I'm going to school, and we'll walk out the front door. I mean, they have any clue how to get to school or where school is at, but their mindset is, I'm goal directed. I want to go to school, and they will go. So the number of elopement or wandering cases that we're experiencing are significantly higher, more than we've ever really seen, in, at least in my community, and over the past, you know, 3-4 years since I've been doing this.
So it
really starting to affect our communities because of the cooped up, the stress associated with all of this. It's starting to become very, very difficult. And we really have to cater our needs to how we're going to serve our communities because of this.
Yeah. And I remember watching your video on your website, BlueLineSpectrumSafety.com, of one of your sons. I think you were on vacation in Disney World or something. And one of your sons kind of, the one with autism, and kind of wandered off. And you and your wife were like, where'd he go, man? For what, 14, 15 minutes? You didn't know where your son was.
Yeah, it was the most nerve-wracking 15 minutes of my life. And we were at Disney World. And if you understand what Disney's like in Orlando, it is mad chaos. And it was just the crowd, and he just wandered off. And that's my middle son. He is my wanderer. So if I just left him unattended, he would just start to walk and just continue to walk. Yeah. No particular agenda or goal to get in mind. He would just wander, really not have an idea of where he was going. My younger son, his wandering elopement is a little bit different. He's more sensory related. So he does it to get out of a stressful situation. So something that's overwhelming, too light, too crowded, too much noise. And he just reacts and runs. And we had this issue with him at school, and we even have with him at home, where his reaction to something, it's sensory related. So it's too overwhelming. It's too much noise. It's too much light. And he's just trying to get out of it. The problem is they don't associate that danger with running into the street or running into a body of water when they can't swim. But those understanding what consequences or danger are not there for our individuals that live with autism in our country. That's part of the disability, is the lack of understanding of consequences or the lack of sense of danger, which is very critical for us as law enforcement, because those are the calls that we're going to go to. And we have the ability to understand that, how we're going to safely locate these people, how we're going to interact with them when we find them, and what danger areas to check for first. And that's a critical component of my training, is searching water. Like, water is a critical part. You know, some of the statistics are 91% of the fatalities associated with children with autism that wander are a result from drowning, because that water is a strong attraction.
Yeah.
They don't have that danger that they can't swim or the water is deep. That lack of sense of danger is a dangerous situation for us. So I tell first responders, law enforcement, I said, if you get nothing out of my training today, nothing, the only thing you take is I'm going to search water in a wandering case, that I've been successful, because that is a critical point that we have to understand.
Wow. So educational. And with autism, brother, I mean, I remember we probably, most of us have seen the movie Rain Man, where Tom Cruise's brother, Dustin Hoffman, in the movie had autism and was very high functional. So there's different levels, right? Or I don't know if that's the right term to use.
Yeah, it's a great term. And, you know, autism is a spectrum. It's classified as autism spectrum disorders, because you can really sit anywhere on the spectrum. You can be on the lower functioning side, the moderate functioning side, or the higher functioning side. On the higher functioning side, you can drive, hold on a job, raise a family, but you always have the characteristics of autism, but they're just not so much that you can't overcome them or work through them. You know, moderate functioning may need some assistance, may not be able to live independently, or maybe live independently. And then our lower functioning side is they will need, you know, assistance for the rest of their lives.
Okay.
So, but you could fall anywhere in me. And then the characteristics that we talked about, those three areas, can vary from person to person. So there's always this little saying that if you know one person with autism, well, guess what? You probably know one person with autism, because the person standing next to them may be very different. Mm-hmm. And everybody's different. So the interactions and strategies I give are pretty universal across the board. So they'll pretty much work in any situation. And my two sons are very different. Both have the same diagnosis, but they're both very different in how they handle things. One's very sensitive to sounds, where the other one is not. My middle son is very sensitive to smells, where my younger one is not. Mm-hmm. So they vary between individuals with ASD or autism spectrum disorder.
Yeah. Wow. And again, I'm sorry for the ignorant question, but I mean, so you're born with autism. It's not something you develop, or can you develop later on in life, or what?
And there's a lot of different theories of why autism occurs. There's nothing concrete. We do know that there is a genetic component associated with autism. We do know that, because they say the likelihood, if you have one child on the autism spectrum, the likelihood that you'll have a second is about 80%. So we know there's a genetic component. Nobody's quite sure what that genetic component is, because it doesn't run in my side of the family or my wife's side of the family. So, and I have three sons. I have a 13-year-old that is your stereotypical seventh grader, and then my younger two now have this diagnosis. We don't really have a reasoning why. The theory that vaccines are the cause of autism, There is no scientific evidence to suggest this is the case. It was one doctor that suggested it. And really what it is with our children, we look for those milestones, their first words, crawling, walking. Mm-hmm. What happens is the characteristics of autism start to manifest themselves in those critical years. We're looking for those milestones. But they also coincide with the same time we get vaccines. So it was correlated, well, you're missing these milestones, it's because of vaccines. Well, it's really just a correlation of time. There's no other correlation other than that. And theory of vaccines has been debunked time and time again. And that doctor actually lost his medical license because of it.
Wow.
So it's just interesting. But there's nothing concrete.
Yeah, it's just interesting the amount of cases has from your point, has skyrocketed over the years.
Right. Just this year for 2020, the CDC released their numbers in May, and it was 1 in 54 births. Wow. 2 years ago, it was 1 in 59. 2 years prior to that, it was 1 in 68. And if you look back 10 years ago, we were at like 1 in 110. So just over,
that's just interesting.
A 15 to 10 year range, we've seen from 1 in 188 to 1 in 54 we're sitting at now. The numbers are, climbing at staggering rates. And as I said, it is the fastest growing developmental disability in the world.
Wow. So Stefan, for the first responders out there listening right now, what advice, and I know you cover a lot of this in your training, but what are some quick tips or advice that you could give those first responders out there listening that come into contact with somebody who has autism or other intellectual disabilities? And what are some advice that you can give them?
So one of the biggest things I want first law enforcement officers to understand is the characteristics of autism. So that lack of eye contact, that lack of communication, about 40% of the autism population will have limited verbal or no verbal ability whatsoever. So they may not communicate. They may not look at you in the eye. What I'm telling first responders to understand is look for these characteristics. Look for...
It's not always a red flag.
It's not always a red flag, right. Look for autism identifiers, whether it's a bracelet or some kind of shoe tag, identifying them. Look for these instances and be able to shift the gear really quick if you can start to recognize and say, maybe this isn't really what I'm thinking is. Maybe this is an autism thing and I can handle things a little bit different. For strategies during an interaction, it's reducing that sensory overload. Children and adults with autism are very set in their routines. Well, when we get called as law enforcement, we are not part of that routine. So us just walking in a door or having interaction with them is not part of their routine. So we've already started to throw them off. So I tell law enforcement officers, reduce that sensory overload. Turn down your radio. If you want lights and sirens, turn that off. Manage your backup. I know, however, we go to calls and maybe 2-3 of us go to the call. One officer should be doing the communicating, not everybody. We bark orders, we're cops. I get it, we're the most patient human beings on the face of the planet. we bark orders. One guy needs to be the communicating and give that extra window for the response. So you may ask them a question, what's your name? And you may get a 10 to 15 second awkward silence. It's not that I'm not trying to answer you, it's just they're taking time to process what you ask them. Seek alternative forms of communication. We started this very simple project in my department. We have PEX cards, and PEX are picture exchange communication system. And all it is their visuals with what we want as law enforcement. And when I created these cards, I did it with our interactions in mind. So us as law enforcement. So what's your name? Are you hurt? Sit in the car, stay here. They're visuals. Mm. Well, what I'm doing is I'm taking a page out of our school districts and just incorporating it into
great idea. Profession. Yeah.
They're very low tech communicative device. They don't take up a lot of space. I carry a set with me every day in my duty bag at work. And the kids just flip through them and they're so used to it. The school district have been utilizing them for years, and these kids have probably been exposed since kindergarten all the way through of these visuals, and utilizing them to get our point across, because visually they can understand, but they may not be able to communicate or understand those spoken words that we're utilizing. No slang or abstract language is a big thing. So if I tell somebody with autism, hey, take a seat, they may actually physically pick up the chair and walk away with it. No, I need you to sit right here. Clear, concise commands. No slang or abstract language in that communication. And then de-escalation strategies.
So important,
And those de-escalation strategies. And then, in a situation where they're experiencing a meltdown, which is just basically sensory overload, and it's really just a complete loss of behavioral control, not to, people with autism are very sensitive to touch. So if we go hands-on, like we typically would in a situation like that, well, guess what? You're just going to make the situation worse. You're going to trigger that fight or flight response.
Yeah.
We can contain them environmentally.
Yeah.
Safe environment. That's not always the case, but we can contain them environmentally. If they're not a harm to themselves or somebody else, why are we rushing to go hands on? But that's what we do as law enforcement.
And I'm assuming, even though I hate to assume, Stefan, that you tell your troops, like I used to tell my troops, take your time. Don't come to a judgment right away. You know, take your time. I mean, most of the time we have time on our side. You can talk. And you know, don't come to that quick judgment of, oh, this guy must be drunk or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. As a defensive tactics instructor, right? Somebody says the same thing. Give yourselves time and distance. They are our friends. Yeah. These calls for service are no different. If you have time and you can create distance, great. And I said, containing them environmentally, if they're in a safe environment, they're not going to harm themselves. Great. If they're having a meltdown in the middle of an intersection, different. But if they're in their own home or a controlled setting, let this meltdown ride itself out, because that's really the only way to get them to de-escalate. Using some de-escalation strategies. And another great tool that we started using as a department is we incorporated sensory kits. And sensory kits are just a kit that we carry in our squad cars. They have noise canceling headphones. They have different types of fidgets. They have a whiteboard for alternative forms of communication. We have all these different things, and we're putting these kits together to be able to get them out to law enforcement at no cost. And incorporating these kits into our cars, we've utilized them on calls. And it's a simple, very cheap, effective solution that will work wonders on a call for service.
Wow.
And just these little things that we can do that cost next to nothing that can change the dynamics of an interaction drastically. You know, we see these incidents like, you know, in Arizona and Utah and here in Chicago, these interactions with adults and children with autism that have now gone viral. And we are you know, or school resource officers in a school setting. And it's a big thing we talk about too, is how you safely interact. And, you know, and I do this training, I just did this about 2 weeks ago in Tennessee, and I pulled some recent headlines, and in like a 6 weeks time, I found like 14 different headlines involving negative interactions with law enforcement and adults or children with autism. Mm-hmm. We can do better. And my goal of this training is to prevent, you know, obviously harm to us or that person, but really keep our departments out of civil liability, because it just opens the door.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's just getting the training.
Yeah. I was going to say
getting the training, education, and understanding.
Education and training. Yeah.
Is key.
Yeah. Well, Stefan Bies, thank you, brother, so much for coming on the show. All those listeners out there, please reach out to Stefan at BlueLineSpectrumSafety.com. And you need to take his training, folks. We need to get better at, having interactions with people with autism and other intellectual disabilities. Brother, any other sites that you want to mention, or any other ways to communicate with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Okay.
Just look Stefan Bies or Blue Line Spectrum Safety, that will come up. I'm always looking for connections for law enforcement across the country. I do some articles. So I've got a few articles that I've published out in Caliber Press. And it's basically interactions, different forms of communication, how we responded to wandering events, and just the do's and don'ts for us as law enforcement of how to interact with people with autism. Again, I'm happy to train departments all over the country. I was just in Tennessee a couple of weeks ago doing this training for 300 plus officers down in Tennessee. I'm happy to do whatever I can for departments. And again, the training is essential, and it's just there's certain things red flags that we could understand by just getting a little bit of training, creating a little bit of understanding. And that's the biggest thing. Those people that say I support autism awareness is great. Awareness is great, but I don't want awareness. I want acceptance and understanding. And I said in the beginning, I do this training because maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but somebody listening may have contact with one of my two sons, and I want to make sure they have the best information out there, safely interact with them and create that positive interaction. So Patrick, I appreciate me being a guest on, and thank you for your time and the opportunity to talk about this.
No problem, brother. Everything we said or talked about is going to be linked up in the show notes, brother. Thank you once again for serving this great profession and the great work you're doing and giving back to our communities and our brave men and women who serve us every day. Stefan Bies, thank you for coming on, brother.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.